Blue Wire.
Iguodala to Curry, back to Iguodala, up for the layup. Oh, blocked by James. It's over. It's over. Cleveland is a city of champions once again.
The Cleveland Cavaliers select Colin Sexton, Darius Garland.
Here comes Sexton. Some rhythm.
And he got it. Young Ball continues to wear him out.
Do you know what the Cavs fans are calling the Darius Garland, Colin Sexton backcourt?
What?
Sexland.
Oh, that's good.
Welcome to the Chase Down Podcast, part of the Blue Wire Network. I'm your host, Justin Rowan. With me today is my co-host, Carter Rodriguez. Carter, how you doing, buddy?
Doing well. It's Sunday afternoon. The Cavaliers were not able to fight their way to a second consecutive win, this time against the Bucks. And their six-game road trip has concluded, thank God. Hopefully the team will get healthier soon. Because they're just so beat up. It's so hard to evaluate much, but we're going to do our best.
Yeah, we're firmly in the Ace Ventura pet, or not Ace Ventura, Dumb and Dumber, pets are falling off stage of the Cavs. But at the same time, even without a head, they're still playing fetch. They are still competitive. They're still battling, and I'm impressed. Like,
Justin, just to be clear, you're the kid, the blind kid from Dumb and Dumber that's just petting the headless bird, going, pretty
yes.
birdie,
yeah.
pretty birdie.
Except that headless bird is doing tricks. I'm really impressed. JB Bickerstaff has taught a dog a new trick, and I'm impressed by him. I think we should actually start off by giving him some credit. So, friend of the podcast, Spencer Davies, had a good article on the Cavs big lineup. Chris Fedor did one as well. I'll give credit to Spencer because he was out ahead of this, and I like supporting our people. But I'm just really impressed by him finding ways to make this work. Like, it's ugly. It's not fun basketball. It's fun from a novelty standpoint. And maybe novelty has a role in how effective this is early on. Just like we saw when Houston went really, really small. Teams didn't really know what to do with it. But you still have to give them credit for coming up with an effective game plan. I mean, the Dotson with four centers, or I guess Larry Nance playing shooting guard and three other centers lineup, was just one of the more entertaining looks I've ever seen.
Well, I mean, he's got the kind of ground, the air cover to kind of do whatever the fuck he wants.
That's true.
Doesn't really have a whole lot of players with a pulse right now. I think they've only had, nine guys that are even healthy enough to play most of these games recently, including some people who I don't think he ever intended to play early on. So, I think that he's got the air cover, but I'm much more impressed, and I don't know what the percentage of this is. Pride, if it's happy to be back after 9 months of basketball, if it's some way that they're motivating and they're trying. This team's still playing super hard in games where you kind of would not begrudge them starting to mail it in. Like, whenever they've lost, sure, there have been a few moments. Like, and frankly, they also have played a really demoralizing set of teams that should have made these games enormous blowouts. Like, the Magic aren't going to win the East here, but they're a super hardworking team that dogs you on the perimeter and makes you work for everything you get. Like, these are the kind of teams that you would kind of expect them to pack it in on with only one healthy guard on the entire roster. And the fact that they haven't, I think, is maybe a testament to JB. I'm not in that locker room, but someone's doing something right there.
Yeah, I mean, I think you got to credit the whole coaching staff. And I think your point about the opposition is a good one, because these are teams with strong perimeter defense. Like, they should make it more difficult for them to initiate their sets. And yes, they are unconventional sets, and that plays a role. But the fact that they've been able to hang around has really, really impressed me. And it's also, I mean, there's opportunities in this. So, like, I don't think anything we're seeing right now is a reflection of how good this team is. Like, we're not really getting a sense for what the Cleveland Cavaliers are, because there's so few guys that are core pieces that are still playing. But I do think that it is kind of an interesting opportunity to get a look at someone like Lamar Stevens, who maybe is a little shot happy right now, but I've liked what he's brought overall. I think it's interesting to look at Isaac Okoro being tasked with doing a little more than he's comfortable with, and seeing how he struggles. Like, I think that can be informative. It's just kind of an interesting time to watch the Cavs. Like, it's almost like a science experiment at this point rather than a reflection of what they actually are.
Yeah, I mean, if anything, it kind of shows you what is going to continue to be transferable. Like, we talk about the turnovers, and I just think this team's going to force turnovers all year at this point. You know, at a certain point, like, we're 1/7 of the way through the season. Like, they're still forcing a turnover 1 out of every 5 opponent possessions. Larry Nance and Andre Drummond are still top 3 in deflections. Like, I don't think this stuff is really going away, because the personnel that's missing is the kind of personnel that leads to kind of juicing the offense. But, you know, the core pieces are still doing their job. I do think we're learning a little bit about Isaac Okoro, which is that his ability to attack a set defense is probably more limited than we thought it was going to be going in.
Yep.
I don't think he, you know, like, I mentioned, we were talking on our Discord during that last game against the Bucks, where, you know, he had just a pretty brutal game finishing, and someone said, oh, well, you know, I remember Garland missing a lot of easy ones last year. I'm like, yeah, well, Garland was kind of able to generate easy ones. Okoro's handle is so limited right now that, and the fact that he's not an explosive above the rim player, that he's not able to generate angles that allow him to finish off the dribble right now.
Yeah, I agree. And the Bucks matchup was particularly difficult with Chris Middleton on him. There was one nice play where he blew by Middleton, but for the most part, he was really affected by the length that they have. I do find that this is interesting, because this is another example of why context is so important in the NBA. Like, you saw what Isaac Okoro did when there was more talent around him. He filled in the gaps. He wasn't being asked to do too much. And now he's really in kind of that Sexton year one role, right? Where you're not really getting a lot of assistance. This is what it would be like if you were drafted at a team that's basically starting from scratch. And it honestly reminds me, on the offensive end, a little bit of Tristan Thompson when he was first drafted to the Cavs, where this is a guy that looks better when he plays with better players. And there's obviously opportunity for him to tighten up his handle, for him to improve as a player. Like, we're so, so early in his career. And I think all the qualifiers that we expected going into the season of shortened training camp, now he's coming off an injury. Like, it was such a quick turnaround. This is kind of what you expected, right? Like, we got excited because he looked like he was ahead of the curve, but once the support structures and the things that were in place that let him fill a role so well are removed, you see that, yeah, there is a lot of room for growth from him. I'm still really impressed by his defense. Obviously, the game against Memphis was just wild. Like, it's nice that he can have a positive impact, but on the offensive end, it's clear, like, he needs more support. He needs someone to create looks for him. He needs to have a team that he's filling a role at this point of his career.
Frankly, what he needs is to only attack in advantageous situations. You know, what are his best splash offensive plays this year? It's been, you know, the game-winning dunk against Memphis when he just got spaced out on by his defender and he was able to make a great cut. It's been attacking bad closeouts. And that's pretty much it. Oh, and in transition, which is the other place you get easy buckets. He's not getting anything on his own right now. And, you know, that's okay. I will say, in terms of projecting him out, and I hope this won't be perceived as overly negative. I do think the more I've seen of him as a finisher, as that kind of below the rim finisher, I can hear her shaking in the background. That's Justin's dog for any new listeners. You know, I think that the jumper is more important for him than I thought it was going to be coming in. I think that's actually the first step to him being a good offensive player, as opposed to the last step, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think that's a good observation. It's going to take some time, right? Like, I don't want to.
And I'm not worried, to be clear. I'm just trying to project, like, what's his road to being an offensive player that I'm happy to see the ball in his hands. Because right now, a lot of it, he's playing a little scared right now, frankly. That you know how he's playing? He plays how I play when I jump into a run that's a little too good for me.
That's exactly what it's
couple
like.
Dribbles and pass it away. Okay, yeah. No. I've run my set. I've gone and set a pick. I've done my job. but I am not really equipped at a skill or athleticism level to hang. So I'm just going to not bother anyone. That's kind of his play right now.
No risky plays that have a high variance in outcomes. Yeah, I think that's a really good observation. And I don't think it's being critical or being negative, right? Like, I think properly identifying what he needs to improve on and where he struggles is instructive, because then you can monitor the progress as it happens, right? Like, that's one of the main things we're looking at right now, because we're not exactly invested in the wins and losses right now, right? Like, we're invested in kind of long-term vision for this team. So,
well, and I will say this, and I just to kind of counterbalance this, if a rookie is having the kind of problems that we're talking about, normally that's an enormous red flag, right? Mm-hmm. Like, oh, he doesn't look like he can really hang out there offensively as a 6'5", 6'6" wing. And I'm not concerned at all, which really speaks to all the intangible plays he's making right now. You know, I summed it up after that 42-minute 0-point game against Detroit, the double overtime game, where I was like, I saw a couple national people concerned, like, oh, how did he only get 4 shots up and not score? And I thought, oh, well, I thought he was really good in that game. So like, that's the kind of nice thing about the kind of player he is. And I already, bemoan when he's not on the floor on the defensive end of the ball, where I'm like, man, because just shutting off point of attack scorers is just something the Cavs have not been able to do for years and years and years. And he's already really advanced in that area.
He's the best perimeter defender on the team. I don't think that's hyperbole at this point. And yeah, we talked about how it's weird for other teams to defend the Cavs because right now they're playing so unconventional. It's also weird for a guy that's learning to play in the NBA that is trying to adjust to the speed of the NBA. And this is as unconventional of a situation as we've ever seen, right? Like, the Cavs were shorthanded before it became in vogue. Like, we did it before it was cool. And it's funny because you see people talk about, okay, well, the league built in a buffer right now to postpone games. When are they going to postpone games? This isn't a sample size, and this isn't reflective of what these teams are, because there's so many guys either with injuries, COVID protocols, or actually testing positive, that teams just don't have guys available right now. And I think one of the concessions that the league and the players made this year was, yeah, we understand that it's not going to be fully representative. It's a shortened season. There's going to be guys missing time. We built in buffers, but as long as you have the minimum number of guys, like, that's the precedent right now, right? Like,
yeah,
that's the rule. We already know one game got postponed because there wasn't enough guys. They know that if they postponed every single game because it's not going to be full
ideal
roster,
competitively,
yeah, then you're never going to get through this season. So
yeah, I'm with you. And I do think that it was funny when this season was being discussed. You'll remember there were some discussions a while ago about not starting till March because owners had dreams of getting fans back in the arena, and they decided to start it in December instead. And what that felt to me was a concession that this year was never going to be what we wanted it to be. Yeah. And their focus became, let's get 2021-22 next season back on schedule when the world is relatively normal again. God, may it please be relatively normal again. And I think what I originally took that to mean in the moment was, yeah, we're just not going to have fans and that stinks. And maybe there'll be a tight turnaround. But really what I think I should have taken it to mean is nothing is going to be exactly as we want. Exactly. The basketball product is not what I want it to be right now. The availability of the players is not what I want it to be right now. You know, the protocols do leave you cold, but like there is a degree of like structurally they kind of have to, or you can't do this. Mm-hmm. So I'm not trying to carry water for the league, and there's some stuff that I find very confusing. Like I straight up don't understand where contact tracing starts and stops. Like if a player tests positive and he has been playing on the same basketball court with his team, how is that not contact tracing? I don't understand, but you know what? I'm thrilled to not need to, you know, like ideally, you know, like this is why, you know, collective bargaining matters so much, is why players union needed to hammer this out with the league. And You know, I think it's just going to be a little unsatisfying this year. Like, it's just going to be like, we just kind of have to take our medicine with some of this stuff because it's not going to be ideal.
Yeah. And I find it convenient that you did not stream this podcast. We are not going live because all around Carter's room right now, there are buckets of water and he's wearing an I Heart Adam Silver shirt. So this water carrier, man, he's putting in his work. I agree, man. Like, it's tough. Like, it's uncomfortable, right? Like, and I think that we understood that, but maybe not the full extent of what this was going to be. I think your point of next season is the one that we're hoping is normal is a good one, because we're going to make a lot of concessions this year. It's not going to be representative of what these teams are. And I don't think we're going to sit here and pretend that we have all the answers, right? Like, we don't pretend that we're experts when we're not. On basketball things, we sure as hell aren't going to do that with COVID. But like, none of this is clear cut. Like, people talking about potentially postponing right now, you can do that, but there is a downside to that of, okay, well, now you have the precedent that you're going to postpone anytime things start to get a little shaky, and that's going to delay the season. You also have the issue of all of a sudden now guys aren't practicing, they're not playing, you increase your injury risk. Like, there's so many factors that the league has to consider right now. And I just don't think there's any clear cut answers. Like,
no, I mean, this is the problem. You know, when you go to design a league there and a schedule and these kind of protocols, what I think if anyone who is being critical really sat down and tried to do this, I think they'd realize that it's just an exercise in making concessions. Yeah. And it's a dam that, you know, you plug one hole and another one pops out. You know, I just don't, there is a certain degree of like, hey, if you're not okay with a little messiness, you just needed to not have the season. And you know what? I get it. I get that take. But you know, the next counter would be, hey, players agreed to this too. You know, they did.
Yeah, there was an opt-out period, right? Like, yeah. The people I'm actually thinking about more are
staff.
The support staff. Like, there was a good feature ESPN did about training staff that's put in the situation. And the last people I'm blaming right now is the teams, right? Because this is all kind of league-level stuff, and these guys are – everyone's trying to do the best they can. You got the support staff that didn't have an opt-out, a chance to opt out. And I guess everyone does in some way, but you need the money, right? Like, it's their way of life. You don't have the same flexibility players may have. And I'm almost at the point where I'm just wondering, because the optics are going to be bad no matter what, I wonder if the league is just going to go about privately sourcing vaccines the same way that they did with testing. Maybe you start the league does that in addition to helping out support vaccine distribution infrastructure and donations, same way they did with testing before the bubble, where they helped the surrounding community. Like, you might just have to eat it, because you're talking about five, I guess 1,000 doses, because you need to receive two. But I mean, we've probably had more than that go bad, because the distribution is bad right now and a lot of ones are getting wasted. I wonder if they just kind of bite the bullet and say, hey, I know the optics aren't great. I think the NHL is doing this where they're just saying, optics be damned. We're just going to get this done so that we can have as close to a normal season as possible and just go forward that way.
Yeah, I mean, Justin, first off, you're going to get us in trouble with this. I hope you know that. Someone is going to yell at us for this speculation.
This is not saying what they should do or what they shouldn't.
It's tough. It's tough. I will say this. It would be a tough line to cross back on, because Adam Silver said, I believe he said something along the lines of, like, unequivocally, we are not going to cut in line for vaccines.
Okay, well, then that rules that out.
You know, so I don't think that's going to happen. And maybe I'm misattributing that. It's very possible.
Yeah.
But I just don't think that's going to be the case. And frankly, they're probably not that far off from herd immunity. Not saying that they should chase it, but, like, what was it, 10% of the league tested positive on the way in?
this year? On a random December day, essentially, right?
Yeah. So, like, I wouldn't be surprised if they're pretty close to herd immunity already. But yeah, either way, not that we want that. Let me be very clear to our listeners. We're not saying that the NBA should just go get infected like some people. Yeah,
just everyone go inject. But, I mean, at the same time, guys that have already had it, like, KD had it, and because he was exposed, he did not take part, right? Like, he still had to do the contact tracing because he could still potentially carry it and give it to other people, right? So maybe the solution is just we're going to change the rules surrounding the hardship exception. You don't have to wait as long, expand rosters further.
That's the one spot where I think the league failed. Why are we not having 17-man rosters this year?
Yeah, like, maybe call off the G League bubble. Call off the G League bubble and have what baseball had, where you had kind of the travel team that practiced with the team in the home market, didn't travel with the team, but they were ready to be called up if need be. Like that might be one of the solutions here, because we've already made the concession that this isn't going to be a normal season. So change the roster size, get in enough people in there. There's other solutions. I mean, my vaccine one is out there. I'm going to actually pass the blame to Dave Dufour, who had posted it as a poll. And it was actually kind of funny to see the immediate reactions of that. But there are solutions, right? Like, we'll see what the league does, but I'm not going to sit here and pretend like I have the answers.
Yes, I will say I did do a little quick fact check on for myself here to make sure I'm not an idiot. Adam Silver said in an interview with ESPN's Stephen A. Smith, your boy, that the league will, quote, never jump the line in any form whatsoever when it comes to players receiving COVID-19 vaccines. So I was correct. It's not going to happen. Either way, the expanded rosters, it just is insane. Like, think about all the steps the Cavs have had to hit just to finally be able to apply for a hardship exception. Like, it seems insane. Shouldn't this be as simple as, one, like, they already should have had, like, if nothing else, they should have wildly alleviated the hardship exception minimums. I don't know if 10-day contracts are available yet, but they should be if they're not. Like, all these different things that, like, make things a lot easier on these teams. Like, I just don't get how we missed this. Like, it just feels like such a no-brainer. And the Cavs are out here playing Larry Nance at the two guard and Thon Maker at the three when there's, like you know, and I want to transition to the hardship exception discussion that Chris Fito reported. Because the Cavaliers have applied, they're likely going to get it. And there are some really good names on the free agent market. They just literally have not been allowed to sign because they're at a maxed out roster.
Mm-hmm. Well, the thing is, like, just like the NBA needs more bodies, so does Blue Wire. And that's why before we transition to that, I want to talk about Blue Wire Hustle, a brand new program where you can host your very own podcast here at Blue Wire. Hustle was created to give everybody the opportunity to take your podcast to the next level. Or if you want to host a podcast and don't know where to start, Hustle is the perfect place for you. As part of the program, you'll receive personal cover art, question and answers with Blue Wire's top podcasters. I actually just did one of those fireside chats, Carter. It was a lot of fun talking to people that started out. And you also
It's fine. I'm hurt that I wasn't invited, but okay. Yeah,
you can blame good friend of the podcast, Ty Windish, for that.
That's fine.
And you also get access to our community Discord and e-learning courses full of tips and tricks. And on top of that, we'll help you get your show pushed out to Apple, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, and all other listening platforms. The best part is you can get all of this for only $15 a month, the same rate as any other hosting site would charge for the initial setup. So whether you're starting from scratch or have an existing show that you want to grow, Hustle is an open door to leveling up your sports experience. Acceptance into the program is limited, so get your application in today. To apply, go to bwhustle.com/join. Check out the description box in this episode to find out more. That's bwhustle.com/join. Carter.
Hold on. Before we pivot off, because I just want to continue to reiterate, this is an amazing deal. And, like, you know, this isn't, I'm not like one that, like, you know, we're pretty tongue in cheek with our ad reads and we like to have fun. But, like, I do just want to take an extra step just to call out how good this deal is. Mm-hmm. We used to pay like $25 a month just for our hosting when we were independent before we joined Blue Wire. Like, yeah, the amount of access that Blue Wire gives you. And then they also, like, not only that, they offered you support, you know, like our series City of Champions, like, would not have been nearly as good without Blue Wire support. So there is so much that comes extra that comes with being, doing a Blue Wire podcast, that this hustle idea, I just think it's a brilliant idea. It's a brilliant business idea on the money end. And like anyone who is wanting to start a podcast, I really think you should apply, because again, you literally cannot get this. Like you could do this. You could spend $15 a month with no support, or you can spend $15 a month with an entire network behind you, with people investing in your success. So I just think it's a really good idea, and I wanted to triple shout that out.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I mean, I think it's such a valuable program, and this isn't just us carrying water and shilling, because we will do that. Like, if anyone wants, we will shill for you. But this is a really great opportunity, and there's a great opportunity opening up for the Cavs, because they are applying for the hardship exception and they need bodies. They really, really need bodies. The thing I'm curious about is, if Garland and Sexton are kind of day-to-day right now and potentially playing when we get back into home market, it's going to be interesting to see what direction they go there, because there are a lot of interesting names. Maybe you add another center, because you can never have enough of those.
They're adding a point guard. There's okay. Just no way. I don't see any world in which they don't add a point guard. I think this kind of...
Your disrespect for Stretch 5 John Henson is really hurting me.
It's not a matter of disrespect. It's a matter of roster need. You know, like Delly, I don't know what happened to poor Delly, but he's been out with a concussion since preseason. So
yeah, I mean, him and Nance got a concussion in the same game, right? Like
and Nance has been back for you know, a damn near month. I'm obviously worried about Delly. They must be too, you know, as I mentioned, Chris Fedor via his tech service broke this news and mentioned who the Cavs were interested in. He mentioned Shabazz Napier, Jeremy Lin, Frank Mason, Yogi Ferrell, and Emmanuel Mudiay, all point guards, all that makes sense. You know, even if Sexton comes back healthy, you still don't have Dante Exum for a month. And I have no clue when Delly's coming back, because I haven't heard a word about it. So, you know, it does feel like they're going to be targeting point guard here.
Yeah, I mean, it makes the most sense. Like, we went into this season saying, hey, the Cavs have too many guards. Where are they going to find the minutes? There's a lot of guys that are going to be initiating. And, I mean... This is one time that we were wrong, and we were wrong pretty honestly here. This is not something anybody expects.
We were wrong, but right to have the take we had. You know, but even so, like, I think even if KPJ were there and Sexland were back and Wendler were there, I still think they could use an extra point guard. You know, that is the thing with Exum being hurt. You know, you need someone to take those 10 to 15 minutes that can also expand to heavier minutes and keep the Cavs in their sets. You know, that's kind of what they've been missing the most recently, is like, there is clearly no offense being run right now. Like, Jetty might be getting assists by sheer volume, and Jetty's a fine passer for a wing. I'm not trying to dig on him or anything, but like, there's no one getting them into their sets and running the offense right now. So I'm really hopeful they're able to add a point guard and that can kind of help them bridge this time until Exum gets back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, not all assists are created equal, right? Like, no one is going to confuse what Jetty is doing as running the offense, right? Like, there are assists of, hey, I was the most recent pass within 3 seconds of your field goal attempt, swinging on the perimeter, that kind of assist. And then there's what Darius Garland does, where it's running the sets, creating high-quality shots. Like, even Sexton's got a lot better. Like, I think when you watch the film, it's clear that there's a difference between the type of passes and the ability to run the offense between Garland and Sexton. But at the same time, like, for everyone saying this is the same old Sexton when it comes to passing, they have the exact same number of potential assists a game, 10.3 between the two of them. And I mean, some of that is Garland is going out there and he's getting guys the ball and they're drawing free throws. And some of the reason for the difference in assists is where they're getting those shots. Like, Sexton's more likely to kick out the three, whereas Garland's creating those kind of high percentage inside the lane passes. But like, getting them back would make such a big difference. And honestly, like, Delly, as much as he's probably at the stage of his career where he's more coach than player, we've seen him step in a pinch. Like, he did it last season. Yeah. He's someone that knows what the Cavs run. He's someone that is very involved with the coaching staff, and he would help a ton. Like, it would be a big, big difference. And I think it's a good reminder that when it comes to things like concussions and even COVID, like, we can treat it the same as an ankle sprain when it comes to day-to-day or out long-term. But there's really a lot of unknown still when it comes to that sort of issue.
Yeah, for sure. So of that list, and again, I'll repeat it, Shabazz Napier, Jeremy Lin, Frank Mason, Yogi Ferrell, Emmanuel Mudiay. Anyone jump out to you? Anyone that you might prefer or not prefer from that group?
Yeah, I think Shabazz would be a really good signing. I think he probably has the best bet of being able to run an offense. Yogi Ferrell would be the other one. That would be my number two, although he is giving up a ton of size. He's someone that can at least stretch out the floor, and I think he can play alongside our guards once they come back.
Honestly, I'm a little surprised Shabazz doesn't have a job right now.
Me too. I mean, like, yeah, I would have expected that he would be on a roster at this point, and especially because there are expanded rosters and there are so many teams in need. It does feel like a good opportunity to go out there and strike and bring him into the mix.
I mean, yeah, for Washington per 36 last year, he averaged 17 and 5.5. Like, those are perfectly fine per 36s for a backup point guard. And sure, he's not a great defender, but he can get you into your sets. He can hit open threes at a pretty good clip. And I'm just a little surprised, frankly. And, you know, I'm hope, and he also can get to the line at an okay rate. He averaged 5 free throws per 36 as well. So, you know, I think he makes a ton of sense. I think there will be, if they added him, there would be some concerns about Delly's long-term future on the team, frankly. Like, because I think he's better than Delly right now, personally. But what would be nice about adding a player like Napier is, I can imagine a guy like that being a contributor through the rest of the season, not just a stopgap, because there will be games where that are not good Dante Exum matchups that are good Shabazz Napier matchups. Mm-hmm. And I think a guy like him or Farrell make a lot of sense for me. I have to ask, any interest in Jeremy Lin, even just for the novelty of it?
I would have some interest in him.
I would be very interested as I tuned into that first Lin game. Like, he might be cooked. He's had some injuries, but could be kind of fun.
Yeah, no. I'm always in for bringing in a name. Like, that's half of why I got excited about JaVale McGee. Like, if it's a name I recognize, that's fun. But I think I could be wrong. I thought there was something about how the Warriors were retaining his rights or there's something there. But, I mean, if he's available, sure, I would be okay with that. I mean, we can dissect these guys and say, well, you know, you're giving up a little bit on the defensive end. We're not, like, trying to construct a roster that is bulletproof and has no issues in a playoff series and something.
Hardship exceptions don't typically come with silver bullets.
Exactly. Like, we are just trying to survive at this point and simulate what a normal roster would look like. So
the only player I'm not interested in at all is Mudiay, who is kind of a go get buckets kind of point guard, but isn't that great at bucket getting.
Yeah, like, I don't think he's really giving you anything that Dotson isn't giving
you. Yeah, exactly. I think that's a great comparison. It's like, anything that you want. I honestly think the way Dotson has played point guard the last two games is about the kind of play you get from Mudiay, you know, especially since Dotson's jumper has been off and Mudiay has never been able to shoot. If I'm the Cavs, I've got the number one defense in the NBA right now or something close to it. I'm not sure if last night it changed, but a top three at the least. And I have the worst offense in the NBA because I literally do not have enough. I do not have enough offensive playmaking to generate advantages. So I'm looking for guards who can get that for me, whether it's a great, a formerly very good pick and roll point guard in Jeremy Lin, Shabazz Napier, who can pull from three a little bit, Yogi Ferrell, who's a very good attacker off the dribble. Like, boy, could they use some juice off the dribble right now while they wait to get healthy.
Yeah, and any life to the pick and roll game would probably make things easier for Drummond as well. Like, there's so many times where they're just giving him the ball in post-up situations and less than ideal spots where, I mean, yeah, like, he's might miss three shots and get the offensive rebound each time and it eventually works out, but it'd be nice if he didn't have to work as hard, because I've seen some comments about his body language and things like that.
I just think that's Andre, man.
It's to some extent, like, it's probably 60% Andre and 40% like, he's had to work his ass off out there. Like the amount of boards he's battling for, the fact that he is jumping all these passing lanes and he's still really competing hard on defense. Like, yeah, he doesn't look like he's having the most fun out there, but he is really working hard still. And I think that there's a toll on him, because that's the other thing we're not talking about is, yeah, there's a novelty to this shorthanded Cavs and the all big lineup and things like that. But when you just have so few guys playing so many minutes, it's going to wear these guys down, and it's going to potentially lead to further injuries or just being not 100% healthy.
Well, yeah, I mean, we talked about this with Matt Moore on the podcast recently, where he was basically like, we'll see how the Cavs and the Knicks do once their soul has been crushed a little bit, you know, because like that is a part of being on a team like this, where it's easy to try really hard at the front end of the season. But if they, you know, they have one more, you know, trip like this or one more losing streak like this, are they going to start to, you know, lose 10% off their effort? And
dude, that, it looked like, honestly, it looked like that at the start of the Atlanta game. Like I thought that was maybe a potential breaking point, because they had lost two games at that point. Things weren't going well. Things weren't easy for them.
They were getting more and more hurt progressively.
Yeah. And then when Atlanta let them back into that game, all of a sudden it was like, okay, we're back into it. We're back in the mix, and they've been competing ever since. So I do think that there's real potential for that. Before we wrap things out, we should probably give a shout out to the guys that have been playing well. I think Dotson, even though he's not shooting great, I think he's really contributed at a level that I didn't really expect. The full context of the situation has to be applied there. And also Larry Nance breaking out of his offensive slump. He's actually hitting some shots. He had the perfect game against Memphis and was pretty good against Milwaukee. So it's nice to see him start to click a little bit there, because you could tell that his confidence was a little shaken in his offensive game.
You know how I'm going to put on my cape for someone that nobody is putting on their cape for, and I feel bad for him, and that's Jetty Osman. This dude is the lead pick and roll ball handler on the Cavaliers right now. And he is doing his fucking damnedest. Like, you know, like, it's so unfair. Like, I'm seeing people griping about the bad shots he's taking. I'm like, if you don't want Jetty to take a three off a curl, the Cavs will take 8 threes a game.
Yeah.
Right now, he has to take some weird shots right now. It is important that he takes weird shots right now on the off chance they go in. And I think he's worked his ass off. You know, he's averaging 5 assists in the last 5 games. More than that, if you don't include Atlanta, where Garland and Sexton were still playing. I think he's put in admirable efforts. No, he's not great, but you know what? This team needs someone who can put up 8 threes in a game and sometimes make 4 or 5 of them. And sometimes he's not going to, but I don't know, man. I'm just like getting a little grumpy about the kind of the Jetty discourse on Twitter. It's like, who the fuck else do you want to do this? Like, do you want Lamar to take some pull up threes? Like, it's like, it just isn't fair to the guy who has been, you know, miscast, and then he got put into his perfect role, and then he got, and we were all happy with him again, and then he got thrust back into a spot where we know it's going to be hard for him to succeed, and then some. And it's like, I don't know, man. I think Jetty has honestly kept us in games just with, you know, a baseline competency as a pick and roll player. And no, it's not super sexy. Yes, the 3-point percentage is pretty hideous. But like, I just don't know where else you're getting these kind of attempts and spreading out your shot profile to the extent that, you know, you can survive without him.
You know what it actually reminds me of? And I made this comment before the Cavs got all the way to this situation, but it reminds me of Brooklyn a couple of years ago, where they just didn't have talent, but they're like, hey, just take the shots. Like, just
get the shot profile right.
Yeah. Get the shot profile right. Take the right shots. Get those offensive rebounds. Like, if we just practice the right habits, you'll one, get better at those shots, and two, like, just your offense functions better. And the offense is ugly. It's probably the worst offense in the league right now because of who they have, but just take those shots, take the right shots, run the offense, and we'll try to figure things out and continue scrapping on the defensive end. So, you know what? That was a good defensive Jetty. I think that's a great place to wrap things up. Way to cape for your boy. We'd love to see it. Do you have anything else to add before we wrap this thing up, Carter?
I wouldn't mind a few more Dean Wade minutes. I think he's actually played pretty well, even when he doesn't put up a lot of box score numbers. I like the way he moves his feet on defense. He's you know what he does really well? He's better than you think he should be at a balanced closeout, where he has to run a guy off the three-point line but not get blown by. I don't think he's amazing, but like, I don't need Thon Maker minutes anymore. I'd rather those minutes go to Wade, because Thon isn't adding much else, and Wade is an actual shooter, not a theoretical shooter. Mm-hmm. Even if the Cavs aren't in a space to get him the kind of time he needs to get his jumpers off right now. But overall, I just think he's a little switchier, a little spacier, and I've been impressed in the small spurts. You know, he's impressing me on the margins, even though, you know, if you look at his box scores, the numbers really aren't there.
Yeah, you know what? Him and Stevens, I think, are nice examples of the Cavs kind of taking good chances on kind of these fringe guys that kind of profile like, hey, maybe they can be rotation guys or guys that can fill in and give you rotation minutes. Maybe he's going to play some small forward for us. I mean, with the way things are trending, maybe he gets the small forward nod instead of Thon Maker in the Nance at the two lineup. But hopefully Sexland is back from a programming standpoint. We will be recording on Wednesday just because the Cavs are playing Monday, Tuesday. Makes a little more sense for us to have those two games. Hopefully we get some of those guys back. Thank God this road trip is over. The Cavs are still 500 and it's mid-January. How about that, Carter? Just like we predicted last year before any of this COVID. We were like, yeah, you know what? I think we'll get to mid-January and still be 500, right?
Yep, that's exactly what we said. Big fan. Good team.
We're just always smart. We always got the right take. So big thanks to all our listeners. Hope you guys are staying safe out there. Things are absolutely crazy right now with the NBA. Hopefully we get some clarity there. And hopefully the Cavs get healthy in the very near future. Want to thank you guys again. If you want to support the podcast, the best way to do so is by leaving a rating, leave a review, subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe, and help cook those books. If you want to be part of the Chase Downs exclusive Discord chat, you can send a screenshot of that review to chasedownpod@gmail.com. However you choose to support us, we really do appreciate it. Stay safe out there. Until next time, go Cavs.